traveling the world searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Good afternoon, equestrians. This is Scott Miller from the International Equine Network, broadcasting to you live from Delray Beach, Florida. Greatest horse place in the world. We got everything here. Show horses, race horses, standard bred horses. You name it, we've got it right here. Got Gulfstream that's close to us. We've got Tampa Bay Downs that's close to us. We've got Wellington. We got WEC. We got everything here as far as horses are concerned. And the reason we have it is because of the people in our industry. The horse industry seems to be on an upswing. A lot of money being put into the industry, as we've talked about over the last few months. And I'm going to give you some reasons why that the industry is doing very, very well. One of the reasons why is we have Jim and Dana Bernhard, the owner of Penn Oak Stud. And they've just acquired Adena Springs Annex property in Lexington. And, you know, it just goes to show you that the industry is solid out there. It may not be solid for everybody, but the business people are really making it go. It's a hard struggle for the smaller horsemen, which stands to reason they don't have a lot of money, you know, to work with. But all in all the big farms are doing really good. Within 9 months of purchasing the 793 Penn Oak Stud near Versailles, Kentucky, Jim and Dana Bernhard had acquired an additional 465 acres from Adena Springs, bringing the total size of the farm to just over 1,250 acres. And so their whole operation that they have now is, you know, from beginning to end. You know, they have the breeding operation. They have everything that you can imagine. And the reason they got the Adena Springs annex over there, it was a yearling facility there, pretty much. And so, you know, the whole long and short of it is that the business is doing good. We have people that are spending money. And we'll give you updates on the Penn Oak Adena Springs Annex property acquisition by the Bernhards to let you know what they're doing and what their game plan is. You know, now they can do everything. They can breed. They can race. They can do everything. And very rarely do you see things of this nature happen, you know, in the business. And the reason that is because there's not a lot of people that are really organized to get things done. And, you know, I'll give you a good example. Windstar Farm, they do the whole nine yards, and it's good management that they have there. Elliot Walden, Kenny Trout have done a superb job with Windstar Farm. They've gone both domestic and international, and they cover all areas of the thoroughbred industry. And it takes a lot of doing to do that. You got to have a lot of business knowledge. You got to be a good horseman. But most of all, you got to be a good person. And Elliot does a good job there at Windstar with everything that they do. And they're on the cutting edge. And I'm sure they're going to have a good derby this year, which we'll talk about here in a little bit. But one of the things that the industry has to worry about is integrity and safety. That's the things that we have to worry about to keep a good public, you know, attendance at the tracks and at the sales and that type of thing. And there's been a lot of controversy over horses breaking down, you know, at Saratoga, at Churchill Downs, Gulfstream, Santa Anita, you name it, you know, they've had that happen. And so right now, they seem to be focusing on the surface, on the surfaces that the horse runs on. And, you know, I think that could be some of it, but it's my opinion that it's the gene pool that we're dealing with. It's the breeding, the inbreeding that we have. We don't have our inbreeding is getting so close in the thoroughbred business, it's scary. I'm surprised we don't have any two-headed thoroughbreds running out there the way the inbreeding's been getting. But long and short of it, when you have the inbreeding getting close, the bone cells and the muscle mass and everything seems to be the one that gets hurt the most. And I think that it's a lot of the injuries are stemming from the inbreeding and the way the horses are being broken, raised as yearlings. There's a surgery that they do on baseball players. It's called the Tommy John surgery. And it's into the elbow and so forth. But I heard a baseball player talking about this the other day. He had the Tommy John surgery. He's 24 years old. He's a major league player. And he's constantly had trouble with his arm. And he honestly believes that it was from when he was in school, in high school, when he was young coming up. He always wanted to be a pitcher, which he became. He fulfilled his lifelong dream, pitching in the major leagues. But he started going back to what happened. He remembers the day in junior high when his arm would be sore after pitching, in the youth leagues. Icing his arm down, just the normal things. A lot of kids see the big guys do it, and they do it. Well, he gets into high school, and he's pitching, and he's a state All-American. He's going to be drafted right out of high school into major leagues and everything. And so right at his senior year, he had an arm operation on his Tommy John's, on his elbow there. And so the doctors basically told him that what had happened, that he had, as he was growing, he kept pitching and pitching and pitching, and the injury kept getting worse, worse, and worse. And the doctor told him, he said he should stop pitching and maybe play another position where he's not abusing his arm every day. And so that kind of got me to thinking about the thoroughbreds. A lot of these horses that come out, and they're young horses, and they're trying to get them ready for the sales. The owner buys a horse, and he starts looking to get a return on his money real quick. And one of the ways to do that is to buy a yearling and start breaking it and get it ready for the two-year-old trading sales and the two-year-old races. And, that seems to push it a little bit, kind of like, a young ball player with pitching a baseball. And it does damage to the horse. What happens is they start training, and with pressure and the tension that they put on the muscles and put on the, on the bones in their body is really tremendous. And you got to remember that these yearlings are still growing. They get, what they call buck shins, and the horse, it's a growing situation there, and you got to stop on them for a while. And, then they don't anymore, but they pin fire their legs or, what they used to do, back in the day. And so now, you're looking at it that you're constantly trying to, repair this horse damage that it's incurring during his early years of training. Now, back in the day, the old people older than me used to take a horse, and when they break him, they'd turn him out for 2 or 3 months, let him grow up some. When I first went onto the racetrack, and I had working for Dewey Smith, and I was with Al Bobbitt, Liscopay, and Cabildo Lake, and they came along in their two-year-old and years, and they went right off the bat, promising stake horses, and they got turned out, to the field. And here I'm thinking, why do that, when we're running and we're running good and winning? Dewey Smith, an old-school trainer, said we do that to let them grow, let them get out and grow naturally, let them happen naturally. And they're getting fed out in the field, running with all the other horses and playing and, doing their thing. And so that started weighing a lot of on me, what I've heard from some of the, from the old-time trainers. I just started thinking about that a lot and hearing that about baseball and, getting to think about kids growing up and when I grew up and how fast I grew up, and how much weight I gained between, sixth grade and eighth grade, and how tall I got, that type of thing. And so it's the same thing with the horses. And I think that that's what we need to be focusing on now, is how the horses are raised. Nobody's really done a study on that yet, but I think it's time for them to do that, is go in and take a case group of horses, some from California, Texas, Florida, Kentucky, New York, Pennsylvania. Just select a few horses and see how they're raised, what kind of feed they're getting, their exercise routine that they're going through. All kinds of things like that, how fast they grow, how much weight they grow. When were their growth spurts, and how long did those growth spurts last? And then bring them along, because I think they're getting horses nowadays too quick into training. And the one good thing that we can do with it is, unfortunately, we've had some major breakdowns in the past year. But nevertheless, we've got information that would tell us, how they were raised, when they started training, the difficulties they had through training, if they had buck shins, if they got hurt, that type of thing. How many times did they race? We have all that information that's already, that horse has already given us, that we can go back and look at and make a study there and go back and see what kind of feed they got, what kind of water they had, just all the different things that went into that horse's rearing up that they would have. And that's what I'd like to see happen. Then we could start putting it with all these other things that are happening, on the track, especially when they, go to the track and they get shod and, they got new shoes, it changes the angle or their step. There's a lot of things that we can add into this study as we go down the road that's already been done and everything. So and what I like about HISA and all the racetracks now, they're really into the horse business more so than they ever have been before. And a lot of trainers and a lot of owners don't like it, because we have to follow the rules now. We got to go by the rules. We can't just, slough off and say, oh, well, we used to, that type of thing. It's not the old days, but it's the last, I'd say, 20 years that a lot of things that they've been doing, from a medical standpoint, as far as nutrition and shots and vitamins and everything, a lot of things over the last 20 years have changed dramatically that I think affects our business and all. So there's so many things there that we have to look at. Now, one thing I do like about our industry, everybody's trying to get on the same page, and that's what I like about HISA. HISA gets everybody on the same page in all racing jurisdictions, to where, the rules are are the same. Now, a lot of trainers don't like that, because some of these trainers were cutting corners. There's a lot of trainers that were, maybe training horses that were sore. That can't happen anymore. That's been taken away from them. And it's good for the business. Now, NYRA, the New York Racing Association, is considering adding all-weather track at Saratoga due to the fact that they just had, quite a few breakdowns at Saratoga. And by the same token, when Churchill had their breakdowns this summer, they moved their racing to Ellis Park. They got them off the surface at Churchill and got them to Ellis Park. Not saying that Ellis Park had a better surface, but just saying a change of tracks, venues, we'll say, made a difference. And it did. It made a difference. But we can't say that Ellis track was better than Churchill, or Churchill was better than Saratoga. But, it was a change in routine for the horses. So, that's another element that we're looking at, to be there. What I like about it, the synthetic course is being built for the Belmont Park on an all-weather surface, also could be coming to Saratoga. So they think that this all-weather surface might be the trick, to it. They're going to find out and just see, what happens. They're still going to have the dirt and turf and everything, but they're going to get an all-weather track in there, hoping that it will, you know, stop a lot of things. And what I like about having an all-weather track, you know, and I hope all the tracks eventually get one, is two records. You can keep, you know, like this horse trained, you know, 30 days on an all-weather track, you know, no injuries. This track, this horse trained, you know, 30 days on a dirt track and had a little, you know, lameness every now and then, you know, that type of thing. And so now we're starting to, you know, kind of single out areas that we think that could be damaging our horses, you know, that type of thing. But like I said, it's going to be intense. It's going to be time consuming to have these studies done. But if we can get all the trainers and all the owners and breeders on the same, you know, course, that's really going to help. That's really going to help our industry. We can start really pinpointing where it is and, you know, what it is, you know, that type of thing. The safety has been an issue at this meeting at Saratoga and the industry as a whole with seven horses suffering catastrophic injuries. It just makes it, you know, all more important that we get this thing done. The problem with artificial surfaces and dirt and so forth and so on, right now we don't know if artificial surface is going to hurt any of the horses. We don't know if that's going to happen. And so Saratoga is really looking into that, you know, big time. But the other thing that comes into it is you got to think about, you know, not only the horse, but the trainers. You know, how does the trainer go to, you know, his owner and says, okay, Mr. Owner, we're here at Saratoga, which everybody loves to train at. We're training on an artificial track, and we want to go down and run the $1 million, you know, Virginia Derby that's on dirt. Or we want to go run the Kentucky Derby that's on dirt, or Hot Springs to, you know, the Arkansas Derby. That makes it very difficult on the trainer because, you know, we really don't know how the horse training on an artificial crosses over to a dirt track like, say, Churchill, you know, or you know, Belmont, or, you know, what have you. So, you know, now we're getting a lot of things into it that, you know, the owner has to think about. Do I go with this owner that's got a hot hand, or a trainer that's got a hot hand on artificial turf, you know, to dirt or to grass? You know, what do we do? And those are million-dollar decisions that they're making there. You know, and in line with that, you know, the trainers have to, you know, train for an artificial and go race, you know, at other tracks on different surfaces. You know, that really becomes important. And I think one of the important things that's going to have to be done with the artificial track is the fact that the racing venues are going to have to recognize the artificial track, and we're going to have to get the possibility of graded stakes races on the artificial track, more money, purse money on the artificial track to, you know, give an incentive for the owners and trainers to stay on the track, on the artificial track, and move around to the different tracks that they have. You know, that's very important. Now, you know, the dirt will always be there. The turf will always be there. And that's very important. So now the trainer is really in a jam because now he's got to figure out, do I train my horse for the turf, for the artificial surface, or for the dirt? You know, that's the big, you know, the big thing right there. You know, but it's all for the industry. You know, we got to make the industry safer for the horses, safer for the riders, you know, as well as think about, you know, the owners that are, you know, supplying, you know, the horses for the industry. So that's going to be tough. And I'm telling you now, you know, it's really interesting to see, you know, how this is going. Blood Horse the other day had an article, Industry Voices, synthetic tracks protect the thoroughbreds. So now, you know, we've got the owners and everybody, you know, are going along with this, industry change. And it's going to be tough because you can't change it all at once overnight. Sure, you can take a horse down and run it on a synthetic track, and it might like it, and it might not. Just like it might like the mud, it might like the dry fast track, it might like the turf, soft and yielding. There's all kinds of things there. So now, it's going to be a chess match, we'll see, to see who's going to be able to do that. If they're going to be able to see what's going on. Hey, they're experts and leaders in the industry who now recognize that we are at a critical stage, and I know I am ready and willing to bring about a change and to do what needs to be done to make the sport right, and that's my feeling on it. We got to do what's going to take care of these horses, what's going to be right for them. It's going to be very interesting, and that's one thing I like about Heisa. Heisa has come along, and they're behind a lot of these changes. They're ready to regulate these things, how it's done and when it's done and everything. They're the statistic keeper. And in a few years, we'll be able to go to Heisa, and we'll be able to look up, all the things on there. How many horses, went down to a fatal injury on artificial tracks, on dirt tracks, on turf tracks, at a cheap track, at a good track. That's what it looks like. And I hated to say a cheap track and a good track, but that is true. And for a long time now in the industry, everybody has said, so-and-so track is a cheap track. I don't go there. They don't take care of it. Well, yes, they do. The small tracks all over the country, every track, they take care of it to the best of their ability. That's what they do. So you can't come back and say, so-and-so is a cheap track. I would never race my horse there, that type of thing. And I tell you, I'll be honest with you, there's a lot of times that I've heard owners and trainers say, I won't race at this track. It's a small track. It's not a real good track. And I tell you why. They're afraid to take their horse there because if their horse gets beat and it shows up in their race record as being beat at, a smaller track or a cheaper track, that's what they don't want to see. They don't want to see that, on their record, because breeding purposes and sale purposes, people say, the horse ran here at, so-and-so track and got beat. And that's just, a race is a race, no matter where it's at. And I'm a firm believer in the fact that if you got a good horse, he's going to run anywhere, anytime, any distance. That's the way I look at it, But other people don't do it. They say, he's just a mile and a half horse. Well, that may be true, but in order to run a mile and a half, you got to run a half mile, three quarters, a mile and a quarter, and a mile and a half. And to see how good he is, and I tell you, it's becoming a chess match for all these all the trainers and the owners. And I'm going to give you some good examples here, for what they're doing here. This weekend is a great weekend all throughout the horse industry. We got a lot of good races going all over Del Mar, and Saratoga closed, Keeneland's opening. Then we got Churchill be running. And then Keeneland, and then Churchill again. We've got Del Mar. We've got the New York meet that's opening up. Aqueduct will be there. And so, there's a lot of good races coming up. And one of the things that I can say now as an owner, used to be wannabe trainer when I was trying to train, but I still had to, I had inexpensive horses. Didn't know what I was doing. It's still all part of the process that no matter where you're at and what level you're at in the business, you've got to go through it. And you got to think about your training aspect that you're doing. You got to select your horses. And when you get your horses, you start to figure out where you want to go with them. You sit down and, at the table and say, where are we going to go with this horse? And, it's got blood and it's got turf in its blood. It's got speed, but no distance. So you start figuring out where you're going to go, what tracks you're going to go to, who's got a good turf track, who's got the good purse money, who's got the good everything. You know, and you try to figure it all out so that you can do the best for the horse and do the best for the owner. That's what you got to do. Now, this is a unique situation that's happened in Kentucky. Back many years ago, they had a place called Dueling Grounds, which now is called Kentucky Down. And everybody said it would never work. It's in an old farm field on the Kentucky-Tennessee border. And it's just out in the field, and it goes up and down over hills and big turns. And shoot, there sometimes you can't even see the horses on the track up from the grandstand because it curves and goes down through the, you know, through the woods. You know, it goes down and up and down hills. But owners started really looking at this Kentucky Downs many years ago and started trying to get the feel for it. It's a European-style gallop is what it is. And, I mean, it's a beautiful track. It's a great place to race. And then Kentucky, you know, wanted to make it go. So Kentucky said, we're going to have to do something here to make this track go, to get the big horses in here, the big names in here, and get the fans in here, in which they do. They get them in there. And I'll give you a good example here. I'm going to give you two or three examples here. They have the Gunrunner Stakes. It's September 2nd was the Gunrunner Stakes. And we had Will Walden, Brian Lynch, Mike McCarthy, Shug McGahee, Ash Mewson, Doug O'Neill, Brad Cox, and Todd Pletcher. So you got the best of the best from the country, north, south, east, and west, out here in Kentucky Downs. And why are they there? They're out there for the Gunrunner Stakes. It's 1 mile on the turf. The purse is $1 million. The purse is $1 million. And I'm telling you what, going 1 mile on the turf, that you earn that money quick, real quick. And like I said, we have all the major trainers that were in here, had that in there. They planned for it all year long, to race at Kentucky Downs in these big races. And sure enough, I tell you what, this doggone thing came in, and Shug McGahee, which is a good trainer, noted for Easy Goer and a horse called Rhythm, he comes in there, and I'm telling you what, this horse come in there, talk of the nation. He come in there and he ran a great race all the way through, you know, going on the turf there. It was not a sprint. It's not a distance race. It's a mile. So you got to have a horse that can cover both, can cover the grass, can cover the European style, course that it was. $1 million up for grabs. You know, and I'm sitting here looking at this thing and saying, well, holy cow, you know, this is pretty doggone good. Shug's cut out of that was $600,000. $600,000 in one race. And so, you know, that gives the owner and the trainer a whole different mindset as far as training's concerned. When you come in out there, you're going to point that horse for that race. It's just like you get them fit and you run it. You got to point the horse for that race. And then that there's also other, you know, the Breeders' Cup. You know, you're looking at a $1 million race there. You know, you could run a horse literally two or three times on the grass in places like Kentucky Downs, Keeneland, Churchill, the Breeders' Cup, and make, you know, $2-3 million for the horse just running three or four times out of the year. You know, and that's why I'm saying the business is getting better, because we got tracks like Kentucky Downs that are coming up, you know, with what they're doing. On the card, they call it the Big Ass Music Fan Music City Stakes Race. It's another $1 million race. I tell you, it's 6.5 furlongs on the turf. You know, you're looking at pretty much at a sprint there. And we literally had everybody in there from all over the country. And they had 16 horses enter the race. It was a 12-horse field. You know, and I'm sitting there thinking, like, holy cow, who's going to win this thing? and Brandon Walsh came up and won the thing. And again, you know, we're looking at the first place money that he got was $585,000. And it was a great, great race, but you got to train for the turf. You know, you just can't say, oh, I'm going to run him on the turf and see what happens. You really got to plan it out because the money is there. And this went on the whole day at Kentucky Downs. It went on the whole day, every race, big races. They had the Mint Million. The Mint Million was a mile on the turf. It's a $2 million race. A $2 million race on the turf. Literally every big time trainer was there to have their shot at $2 million. And it came up that Charles Hills won the race up there. I'm telling you, this horse could run, you know, and they made one big run at him and everything. And Ancient Rome was the name of the horse. And I mean, he was right there on the money. And they trained him and they got him, prepped him, and, you know, put a year-long project into training him and getting him there. And so you look at the race itself, to the winner was $1,178,000 to the winner. So you train that horse all year long for the turf and get him right. Don't abuse him. Don't overrun him. And look what happened. Over $1 million. And that was just the Kentucky Downs, just a short meet. Then we had Delmar. We had the Delmar Derby. It's a grade two. It was $300,000. A nice field of nine, you know, there. Going out here. This really looked good. It was a good race. Literally had all the big trainers there. And they came up. Philip D'Amato, he won the race. And, you know, you're looking at out of that $300,000 that he got $180,000 for running first. And that's good. And you know, let's consider it a smaller stake. Again, on Del Mar, September 2nd, we had the Pacific, the FanDuel Racing Pacific Classic. And this race has been around a long time. It's $1 million. It's going a mile and a quarter. It's for 3-year-olds and up at Del Mar. And it's really a good race. You know, we had just about everybody out there that I thought would be from the West Coast. And we had some East Coast people that were there. And they came up. Bob Baffert wins it. Bob knows how, I don't know how many times Bob has won this thing. But, you know, you're sitting there looking at the race and seeing what happened. And, you know, the race went good. $600,000 to the winner. So, you know, all these owners or trainers are looking at these races, and you got a point for them. You just can't, you know, say, oh, well, I pull out a condition book and say, hey, here it is. Let's try it. You know, and like I said, every track is starting to do this. They're having their, it used to be they had their big day like the Kentucky Derby and the Kentucky Oaks. Well, now it's becoming a meet kind of thing. You know, you build a turf course weekend with a lot of money, a lot of big stake races. You do a lot of, you know, sprint races. You do a lot of different things, you know, all through the meet with that big purse money to get those big trainers there. And so that gives them something to, you know, shoot at. Saratoga did the same thing September 2nd. They had the Jockey Club Gold Cup, which is there, and you're looking at $1 million. It was a fantastic race in there. Todd Fletcher won the race, and this was one of his horses that he pointed for this race. It was a mile and a fourth. You know, same distance as the Derby, but different day, different track up there. You know, that was good. First place, $550,000. You know, to win that race. And so the whole point that I'm getting to here to you is the fact that these tracks are opening up and offering big races, you know, big races for, you know, for these horses. For the fillies and mares at Saratoga, They had it was a mile and 3/8 on the inner turf. It was a $500,000 race. Came up. Christoph Clément won the race up there. $275,000 to the winner. You know, so that's a race that you have to point for. You just can't just pick them up and say, "Hey, I'm going to run here." And that was Del Mar and Saratoga, you know, and Kentucky Downs. So those are three tracks that, you know, that trainers can point to and go for. Now, Colonial Downs, they've been struggling over the years. It's a beautiful track to go to near Richmond, Virginia. The horsemen love it. The management staff at Colonial Downs really put on a first-class operation there. And it's a beautiful track that they have. They got a great turf track there, and every year they have a little tradition. They go out and they burn the turf track. They go out and they burn the tracks. It enriches the soil. It does a lot of things for it. But they do that, so that's the unique thing that they do to get a good, safe surface that, you know, they're always thinking about. And then you start thinking about, well, you know, the purse money, what can they do? For many years, it wasn't very good there. And now they have some good things going. They're getting into the swing of things. They're getting a lot of people there, a lot of people betting on it. And they're getting a lot of fans and a good horse from all over the country are going there. And, for example, like this Saturday, post time is 6:20 p.m. Eastern time. It's the New Kent County, Virginia Derby. It's a grade three. It's a $500,000 added, going a mile and an eighth on the turf. And their turf track is probably one of the best in the country. You know, it's just amazing that they have, you know, that they have there. We got a lot of good trainers there. We got Graham Motion, Christoph Clément, Chad Brown, Mike Maker, Shug McGahee, Todd Fletcher, you know, Steve Asmussen. Best horses in the country. Best trainers in the country. Going right there to it. And that's the Virginia Derby at 6:20, which you can be able to see this weekend. And you know, it's going to be interesting to see who wins that thing. But again, it's Colonial Downs. It's another part of the country. You know, they're having a good race meet there. They're offering good money, getting the good trainers there. And that's what it all, you know, what it all looks, everybody looks for. And the thing that I like about it is they always have good undercards. And this is a, you know, equivalent to the Kentucky Oaks that they have there. And this is the Virginia Oaks. It's going a mile and eight on the turn. You know, like again, the last three tracks that we talked about, they're all turf and they got good money going for it. And, you know, same thing in this one. We got Doug O'Neill from out west. We got John Terranova from out east, Graham Motion from the Mid-Atlantic, Todd Pletcher from New York, Florida, and Kentucky, Chad Brown from Florida, New York, and Kentucky, Mike Stidham from Louisiana, Kenny Mateek from Kentucky. You know, so it just shows you that the big trainers, the big owners are going to these smaller tracks. And why are they going? It's the purse money they're going for. That's why they're going. That's why they're going for it. That Virginia Derby, well, I tell you what, it's going to be nice. They have a lot of good things there. The track, good food, good everything, and you know they get into the tradition of you know the industry is what they're doing. And so you know I started looking and saying, hey, you know now we look at it. We're ready now. The 17th of this month. We start how they get there, the 2024 Kentucky Derby. It's hard to believe in it. It seems like Kentucky Derby was just here, and now we're going to the Kentucky Derby. We're starting to follow it every Saturday. We're going to have Kentucky Derby prep races. The Kentucky Derby presented by Woodford Reserve is a top-ranked grade one stakes race for three-year-olds. The thoroughbred horse for thoroughbred horses. Now, the race distance is a mile and a quarter, and it's run on the first Saturday every May at Churchill Downs. And I'm telling you what, it's exciting because there's a prep race schedule that you have to run in. You have to earn points to get into the Derby. There's only 20 horses that are taken for the Derby. and you got to earn your points to get in. And let me tell you, it goes down to the wire every year. It goes down to the wire every year on who's going to get in. You don't know until that last Derby prep race, which is at Keeneland, goes off in Lexington, I believe. It goes off, and that then after that race is over, then you know who's going to be in the Derby. And Churchill Downs does a great job of it. All the tracks that are involved in it, such as Santa Anita, Del Mar, Hot Springs, Fairgrounds in New Orleans, New York, Kentucky, Florida, everywhere. They've all got Derby prep races. And that's what I like about the horse business, is to get you things to look for. But having said this about the prep races to get into the Derby, you know, that's important. But the program, the format for the program, the business model is all for the same for all the tracks. You know, you got point systems to get into the Derby. You got prep races that you need to prepare your horse with, getting ready to run to the Kentucky Downs. And, you know, there's a lot of trainers that, like Kentucky Downs or, running in the Derby. This is the thing that they look at. You've got three or four races that you can run in prior to the Breeders' Cup. The Breeders' Cup is the thing that everybody wants to get to. You want to win the Breeders' Cup. Because that means you're the best in the world at that distance, on that grass, on that track, what have you. That's what the Breeders' Cup means. And that's why they created the Breeders' Cups. And then they created a series of races that called Win and You're In. Winning your end for the Breeders' Cup is if you win a specified race, prep race, like kind of like a prep race for the Derby, but you win and you're in. And that means that you win that race, all your fees are paid, they help you with transportation, they help you with costs to get to the Breeders' Cup. And so, again, it goes back to, the model, the business models and the program format. You've got a series of races to get to Kentucky Downs Day. You got a series of races to get to the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness, the Belmont. All these other races that we've just been talking about, an owner and trainer can point for that. And it's very helpful in the training because then you kind of know where you're at, with all these things. And, I've been saying for a long time, this is a good thing because no matter who you are or where you're at, you got a chance at winning one of those races if you sit down and plan for it. And it takes a lot of planning. You got to be a good business person, to do that. So every week now we're going to have a How They Get There update on everything that's going on, what races are coming up. Then we're going to come through, and Churchill Downs has got a good thing that they have that we'll be going over with every week. We need a necessary stop on the road to Kentucky Derby. It's about after the horse is foaled, you have to wean it from the mother and the process that they go through to do that and how traumatic it is on the horses being separated like that. The first step on the road to the Kentucky Derby is planning your breeding and planning your training, getting your own trainer, taking the things you got to do to go to the Derby. And doing that, we'll talk about horse racing auctions, offering a plethora of choices, on horses that you might be able to purchase to get to the Kentucky Derby, that type of thing. The hopeful stakes is the... This is really not a Derby prep race. You get no points for it. But there's a lot of races that trainers like to run to see what kind of horse they got, to whether they should entertain going to the Derby, that type of thing. And, for example, the Hopeful Stakes is run at Saratoga. And it's a good race. I tell you, it's just something that a trainer and owner has to look at. It's I don't know how to explain it. It's a good test, a litmus test for your horse to see what he's like, because he's got to be in against really good horses. It's a $300,000 proof, you know, for the horse to run. And, you know, it's a lot of money. It's in a good stakes. It's gonna in good stakes company. You know, it's just something really to look at. And I'm kind of caught between a rock and a hard spot. Now, my opinion. Now, this is on my opinion. Every track during the summer usually has a two-year-old race that offers a lot of money. You know, and I tell you, I just don't know if you should really push your horse to run that early, because historically, the horse that was two-year-old champion of the year and Breeders' Cup winner usually doesn't do very well, with the exception of last year, and Forte was exceptional. But, you know, they're starting to get, you know, planning their races out, you know, where to run and when to run. But like I said, the Hopeful Stakes at Saratoga, you know, it's a $300,000 race. And you're looking at there, that's $165,000, you know, to the winner. I just don't know what to think about these races, you know. But they have that. There's other races on the undercards, you know, and I'll give you a good example. The Del Mar Futurity, it's going to be run this Sunday. It's for 7 furlongs for two-year-olds. You know, you're looking at $300,000, a 7-horse field. And again, no Derby points, but it gives you a kind of knowledge of where your horse is at, you know, physically. Is he ready to run? You know, where do we run with him next? Honestly, the two races I just mentioned to you, the Hopeful Stakes, there's some good races coming down the road. We're looking at the Breeders' Cup, you know, Juvenile and 1st of November. We're looking at the Breeders' Cup Futurity at Kima coming up, you know, in the Kima meet, and then the Breeders' Cup. So there's a lot of good races. But again, we get back to the planning of getting to the Derby. Do you want to go now to these Futurities and all these races? Maybe win the Breeders' Cup, Juvenile, and then start your campaign for the Derby. But again, like we were talking about, with horses growing and you know, the things that you have to do with them to get them school, the trauma they go through, like shipping on vans from one track to the other, changing locations, flying on airplanes, you know, running against them, top-notch horses. There's so many things that you got to think about when you're getting these horses ready to run in the Kentucky Derby or any race, actually. You know, but the whole point that I've been trying to make is the fact that the tracks have started offering the money. They've created a schedule of races that cover anywhere from, you know, from sprint racing, you know, to middle distance to, you know, mile and a half, on the grass, on the turf, on the synthetic. You know, that's going to be interesting, because I see the synthetic racing tracks, if it proves out to be good on the horses and kind to the horses, you're going to see these million-dollar races on the synthetic tracks. And like you do on the grass and the dirt. So that really gives the trainer, you know, in a corner. You know, where do we run? What do we run on? You know, how much money is there? You know, that type of thing. And then, of course, again, you got like the Breeders' Cup winning, you're in. You got to prove yourself a quality horse to get into the Breeders' Cup. And since they don't have a point system for the Breeders' Cup like they do for the Derby, then what you got to do is you got to try to make as much money as you possibly can with your horse and you know, wow them with winnings, you know, in different places. And then you get in the Breeders' Cup. You know, so that's what they're trying to do with that. And so it makes it difficult, you know, for the owner and the trainer. You got to have the right horse. You got to have the right crew, you know, to get there. And it makes it tough. And with Heisa coming in and getting involved, you know, they've already changed rules and regulations on shoes, the medications you have to go through. You know, Bob Baffert's horse that tested positive for, you know, drugs, his vet just got fined for not practicing, you know, proper, you know, distribution of the medication. So, in other words, you know, it came out when Medina Spirit, you know, tested positive. Well, it was the groom. The groom rubbed some ointment on his tail, and that did it. Well, you know, it was the groom. He urinated in the stall, and you know, that transferred over. You know, it was bad hay. I mean, it went through the whole gamut, you know, of everything. But in the end result, what happened, and what I said a long time ago, when Bob got tested positive, he said, yep, sorry about my luck, you know, that'll happen, and it's not going to happen again. But he went through all that time, his three derbies, and now the final ruling came in that verdict was upheld, you know, as far as, you know, misuse of medications to the horse by the vet. So, you know, that answered that problem. But Heisa's come in and they made good regulations about, you know, the standard everywhere, whatever state you go to, you know, if it's 1 cc of, you know, a medication in Florida, it's the 1 cc in New York, California, South Dakota, wherever you got a horse that comes under the guidelines of, and rules and regulations of racing. And so, you know, that's good. That's a good thing. But, you know, like I've been saying all show long today, it's all about organization. I said that from the get-go here at IEN. You got to be super organized. You got to know what's going on, where the horse is at, what he did training-wise, you know, everything. You got to know about that. And one thing that I like is I'm involved with myracehorse.com, and my two horses are at Todd Fletcher's. And this is what I like about it. I own a little bit of the horse, but I'm still an owner. And they show me the respect of being an owner, no matter how small or how big you are. It's every time the horse works, I get an email. The horse worked at Saratoga yesterday at 49 and some change. And said he came out of the work good. And he's getting ready to be shipped down from Saratoga to Churchill Downs. And he'll run at Churchill Downs this fall. So, you know, that's a good thing. But it's all the planning. Another little thing you got to put on your planner's list, your calendar. You know, notify owners, you know, how the horse works, what he's doing, where he's going, this and that. They tell me when he got shoes. They tell me all the things that go along with him. And that makes it nice. But it's all about planning. And now it seems like that with organizations like Heisa and, you know, the jockey club and the racetracks, that they've kind of got, you know, the format, they got the foundation laid to make it great racing for owners and trainers. You know, and it's going to be a lot more pressure on the owner and trainers because you got a lot of big decisions to make. So from the time you buy a horse at the sales or breed a horse, you got to make plans every day for that horse, where he's going, what he's doing, who's with him, who's not with him. You know, you got to do all that. And I think it's great for the horse industry because it makes it a better, more consistent product that when you go to the races, you see a good quality, you know, race program, good money, good entertainment. You see all that. You have good trainers, you know, good horses. And it really works. It really does work. And, you know, they're carrying this over into the show horse industry, too, into the standard bred industry. And that's what I like about all the programs that are getting up. You know, they're getting ready to do all these. I mean, just for example, take a look at the World Equestrian Center in Ocala. You look at Tryon in North Carolina. You look at Wellington, Florida here. They've got new owners and they're really putting money into it, making it better than it ever was before. And it was one of the best places in the country, in the summertime. You look at Devon, another great show horse facility. You look at Parker, Colorado. You look out at Thermal, California. Fantastic shows. Fantastic shows. You see quality riding. You see, good purse money. You see everything that's there. And that's what I like about the horse business is we've got a lot of people doing a lot of good things. Bruce Springsteen's daughter, Jessica, she is doing a heck of a job showing now. And, she's getting ready to make her international presence known. It's just those are the things that we like to see. We've got some show horses called the Global Champions Tour. And they go to like 12 different countries. And they pretty much have the same riders and the same horses. And it's like a big tournament. It's just phenomenal. And it's a big show to go to, something to look forward to. And that's what gets people involved into the horse business. Not only as a patron to come and spectator to watch, but it gives them something that they can consistently do. They can follow, throughout the year, whether it's from, whether they go from track to track, watching the horses, whatever they're doing, and you can plan that. It's good family outings. It's good things to do. And so now it's to the point to where everybody's kind of getting the, hang of it. And the only thing I could say, there's only one business I know that you can go to and find out about everything. That is here at International Equine Network. And you know where I got that idea from? I got that ID from BBS Radio and TV. You go to BBS Radio TV, and you can see anything on there. You can hear politics, religion, music. You can hear jokes. You can hear everything. But see, that's where our society has come now. We realize that we need to, be able to satisfy people's interests. And the way to do that is offer them a little bit of everything. And that's what we're trying to do here. And same with the racetracks. They offer good turf racing. They offer good dirt racing. They offer like a Kentucky Derby or a Belmont Stakes, which is good and all. And it's good. And then right here before I go, my next project that I just started, we have it. It's called the Triple Crown Traditions. And you'll see it on the website. What we're going to do is we're going to have an owner, a trainer, and a jockey during Derby Week. They're going to have a cook-off. They're going to bring their favorite recipes to the track. They're going to cook that, and they're going to cook off. And then they will be judged by a big crowd of people. And whoever wins the Triple Crown at Churchill of our cook-off, he will go to the Breeders' Cup that following November. We'll do the same thing at Pimlico. We'll have a Triple Crown cook-off at Pimlico. And we'll have the same thing at New York, at Belmont. Churchill's going to probably be barbecue. It'll be seafood at Pimlico from Baltimore. And then it'll be steak, and fine dining from New York. And then at Del Mar in 2024, we'll have the three winners come to Del Mar, and we'll have the cook-off and see who it is. And what's really nice about it is we've invited an owner, a trainer, and a jockey at Churchill, an owner, jockey, and trainer at Pimlico, and an owner, jockey, and trainer at Belmont. And then on the first Saturday in November, when we have our cook-off at the Breeders' Cup to see who the Breeders' Cup tradition champion will be, It could be three owners that make it there. It could be an owner, two jockeys, that make it there. It could be an owner, a jockey, and a trainer. But that's a new project that we're working with. So we did a lot of things today, and appreciate you guys listening. And, you know, if you ever get bored, go to BBS Radio and TV and find out what you don't know. This is Scott Miller from Delray Beach, Florida, International Equine Report. Thank you.